You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Now, what's happening? Well, tonight, Wednesday, the 9th of September, that's 9/9/26, 6:30 p.m., dinner, that's right, dinner in Brunswick at Naruda's at the corner of Albion Street and Breeze. I think it's B-R-E-E-Z-E or B-R-E-Z-E Street in Brunswick. Can't miss it, just across the road from the railway station, 6:30 p.m. Now, I know there's a little bit of a revolt going on among the regulars who turn up, and we're discussing tonight a change of venue. Now, we don't change venues unless the only people we listen to is those that turn up. So if you want to be involved in that debate tonight, turn up. Otherwise, enjoy your food. It's a great, great venue. That's all I can say. But in any organisation, revolts are always brewing. Now, next, don't forget the vigils on the steps of Parliament House, public housing, everybody's business. Every Thursday, 12 to 1, and you guessed it, at 1 o'clock, we walk down to the Paramount Food Court for lunch. Where would we be without food? Next Wednesday, which will be the 16th of November, not November, what am I talking about? Next Wednesday, the 16th of September, Footscray Hotel. I'll be doing a presentation on the Eureka Rebellion and why it still matters in 2026. Now, the good thing about Footscray Hotel is they don't have any food. So if you want to eat something, bring your own food and share it with the rest of us. We will videotape the presentation, and that will go on the historical YouTube that I'm involved with, called josephtoscano.narm, N-A-A-R-M. I think it's about 30 YouTube presentations on radical Australian history that most people don't even know about. Now, what else? All right, the last Wednesday of the month, that's the 30th, that's a dinner in Frankston at La Porchetta's. So there's a few things happening, but obviously more importantly than that, there are obviously a lot of issues. There's a state election coming up in about 6 to 8 weeks, and I'm still involved in the Sunbury Dreaming campaign. So if you live in Sunbury, Buller, Tullamarine, Gladstone Park, Wildwood, or Buller, I think I mentioned Buller, and Melbourne Airport, if you're interested in having a candidate like myself put the boot into Divided Nation and the rest of them, give us a call. I'm not asking for your money. I'm not even asking you to hand out stuff. I need people who live in that electorate to nominate me as their candidates. So if you're interested, give us a call on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. The sacred cows have wandered in. They don't live in the Sunbury electorate, but they're all right. Here we go.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national, and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, larger!
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name's Joseph Toscano, and Henrietta will be podcasting the program. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of Anarchist World This Week podcasts you can access. That's if you're bored and listless. If you're not bored and listless, get out there. It's spring. The sun should be coming out. Enjoy yourself. But if you're bored and listless and you can't stand, you know, the social media, and you can't stand the legacy media, well, look at the listen to the Anarchist World This Week podcast, courtesy of 3CR. Go to 3cr.org.au/Anarchist World This Week. Now, it's a strange week. You know, when you've got to keep an eye on what's happening around the place, and then you've got to, and then you have to try, attempt to analyse that's happening, but not in the usual way, but in an authoritarian manner, it can be a little bit difficult some weeks, and this is one of those weeks. But I'm actually interested in the concept of an Australian firewall. Now, those of you who know anything about European politics will have noticed that in some countries, France and Germany to be exact, what we're seeing is diverse political groups coming together to stop the neo-right, the neo-Nazis, from coming to power. And they have an agreement that they will not enter into a coalition with these elements. And that is one way that we have seen that they've been kept out of power. The thing about parliamentary power is that if you do have the majority, it does give you the right to pass legislation which can have a profound impact on a lot of people, a profound negative impact. Now, interestingly, we face the same dilemma in Australia in 2026. You've got the Australian Labor Party, the folk that gave you that supported the neoliberal revolution to the hilt, which has resulted in the rise and rise and rise of divided nation. You've got the Liberal Party, which doesn't have an original idea in its head. You've got the National Party, which is the party of agribusiness, kind of jostling for political ascendancy. And what we're seeing in Australia is something very interesting. Instead of the political parties talking about creating a firewall to prevent a divided nation from having a hand in legislation, we now have the ridiculous situation where the Liberal National Party, which is facing its own existential crisis as far as its very existence is concerned, supporting divided nation by allocating preferences to divided nation, which is fascinating. Now, those of you who think that John Howard wasn't a particularly pleasant individual and had a lot of negative consequences as Prime Minister, when you look at him in comparison to the current crop of Liberal National Party leaders, he was a god. Because John Howard made the decision, seeing the rise of One Nation, made the decision that the Liberal Party would put One Nation last on the ballot paper. That's right. And that's what kept One Nation in the late 1990s, when it was rising from the ashes, out of any major influence as far as parliamentary legislation was concerned. Today, the Liberal Party, concerned about its existence, is more than happy to preference One Nation before any other major political party in this country. The forthcoming Victorian state election will be an interesting exercise in seeing this distribution of preferences and how, if one, the One Nation Liberal Party coalition wins power in the Victorian state election, which is always a possibility, how they will enact legislation. Now, you all know their first policy is going to be to tear up the treaty, which the previous Labor government, or the current Labor government, was able to negotiate over a long 5 to 6 year period with First Nations people in the state of Victoria. Isn't that amazing? People who have lived here for 2,000 generations. And if you're a direct descendant of the Henty brothers, who set up a sheep station at Portland in 1834, or a direct descendant of Batman and Faulkner, who are here in 1835, it means that we've been here for 10, possibly 11 generations in comparison to 2,000 generations. And they're going to tear up a treaty which isn't really that brilliant, but at least it's a treaty. Then we have them talking about removing 1 in 7 public servants. Now, obviously, public servants do have a role. Theoretically, they serve the public. And obviously, many frontline staff will disappear. And we'll see the upper echelons of these public services populated, obviously, by supporters of the Liberal Party and Divided Nation. Then we will see billions of dollars, not millions, billions of dollars cut from the budget to provide essential service for the community. But that's by and by. Obviously, the people of Victoria will make up their own mind in the next few weeks about what they want to see, what they want the parliament to look like for the next 4 years. But there is no discussion about creating a firewall to protect people from the excesses of a divided nation Liberal Party coalition in the state of Victoria. And more interestingly, although Abbott was Howard's hatchet man as far as Divided Nation was concerned in the 90s, there's no stomach in the Liberal Party to actually enter into an agreement to put Divided Nation last on the ballot paper like Johnny Howard did. It's fascinating, isn't it? What people will do to gain power. What they will do. So if you think there's going to be an Australian firewall, no way. No way. No way whatsoever. So what can we do? Well, you can tell people to put One Nation last on their ballot paper. You can talk about what the policies will result in. But unfortunately, people are so disgusted with the outcome of that failed neoliberal revolution, which has pauperised them, they're more than willing to put a group like, to put a Liberal One Nation coalition into power in Victoria. And maybe that's the only way that people will understand the nature of these political parties. Let's move on. Stripping the other's humanity. It's interesting, isn't it? Multiculturalism has now been dumped as an Australian strategy to cope with the variety of immigrants that are coming to this country. And I've spoken about this before. But the thing about, if you want to create a climate where you can point the bone at somebody else, point your finger at somebody else, if you want to create that climate, you need to strip the other of their humanity in the eyes of the majority. And what we have seen over the last decade is elements in our society, both parliamentary and extra-parliamentary, who have done the best they can to strip the other of what little humanity they possess. In terms of denigrating their religion, in terms of denigrating their culture, in terms of denigrating where they come from, where we see the ridiculous notion that if we're going to take refugees, we're not going to take refugees from the world's trouble spots where you need to take refugees. Where dog whistling has become the order of the day as far as most of this country's major political parties are concerned. So stripping the other's humanity is fundamental to creating the conditions that we saw in Nazi Germany, phalangist Spain, and fascist Italy pre-World War II, where human beings who resisted or posed a threat to the status quo were stripped of their humanity, and once they were stripped of their very humanity, they're able to have their existence denied with little or no outcry from the population at large. I mean, the most common refrain, not that I was alive then, but the most common refrain post-World War II, when people were asked, you know, did they know what was happening? They said, no, we had no idea that was happening, although there may have been an extermination camp a kilometre away. No, we had no idea, no idea, no idea. And obviously it didn't really matter, did they? These people had been stripped of the humanity. They weren't really human, were they? They were subhuman at best. And if we got rid of that pestilence, things would be hunky-dory for all of us. Now, I'm fascinated by the goings-on in the Liberal Party in this country. We got the current leader, Mr. Angus Taylor, who was, let's not forget, Dutton's right-hand man, and Andrew Hastie in the background from West Australia. And it's fascinating. Now, Andrew Hastie, irrespective of what you think about him, is a decent human being. When he was, you know, he was in Afghanistan, he was in the Special Forces. And when he was asked what was going on, he stood up as a traditional conservative and said what he said, which resulted in charges being laid against one and possibly a few more former Special Forces soldiers because of the fact that people like Andrew Hastie was willing to come forward and say what he knew. He wasn't going to protect those that had been accused of certain practices. He told the truth as he saw it. Whether this will, you know, be supported by courts, we'll see in the next few years. Now, because Andrew Hastie stepped forward, spoke about what he knew, pointed the finger at various people. He has now found himself in a situation where the price he is paying for coming forward means that the more reactionary elements within the Liberal Party, the current elements, who are more than happy to trade preferences and enter into a coalition with Divided Nation, will continue to rule the roost. And this is nothing new. Whistleblowers in this country pay an extraordinary price for lifting the sheets off situations which need the harsh glare of publicity directed at them. How many whistleblowers in this country, how many people find themselves in hot water for telling the truth, for letting their fellow citizens know what's going on? How many find themselves destroyed psychologically and physically? How many can never be employed again? And in some cases, how many find themselves in prison, as we've seen recently? So it seems that the price of coming forward in this country and letting our fellow citizens know what's going on behind the scenes is quite extraordinary. So who would bother? Who would bother putting their head above the parapet and telling us what they consider to be the truth, what they consider to be unacceptable? If the price they have to pay is the destruction of their career, the destruction of their reputation, the destruction of any financial support they may have, the odium which is created in the community regarding what decent people like Andrew Hastie, irrespective of what you think of his politics, have done to lift the lid on situations in this country that cannot be allowed to go unanswered. This is nothing new. It's something that's happened since 1788. It's nothing new. Because entrenched forces in our society are more than willing to use every ability they have to ensure the truth is never told. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Too big to fail, too big to jail, too big to care. Now, I'm sure you're sick and tired of me talking about corporatisation, but unfortunately sometimes you have to repeat yourself. We may have one new listener, you never know. Too big to fail, too big to jail, too big to care. It's an old slogan, it's nothing new. I didn't make it up, obviously. Too big to fail, too big to jail, too big to care. That's what corporatisation is all about. And nothing highlights this more than what's happening on virtual platforms around the globe. The privatisation and corporatisation of the virtual world has led to the creation of organisations that are too big to fail, too big to jail, and who don't really care. Now, I've noticed over the last decade or so, there have been various sovereign nation states, excluding the US of A, obviously, various sovereign nation states who have attempted to curb the influence of the billionaires who own those virtual platforms that have such an extraordinary impact on so many people around the globe. And the ability of a sovereign nation state, irrespective of whether it's a middle power, you know, or a major player, is exceptionally limited in terms of curtailing the activities of organisations which have become too big to fail. Because if they fail, they have dramatic consequences as far as the population is concerned. They're too big to jail. Obviously, they've got enough money to keep out of prison for eternity. And obviously, they're so big they don't really care what legislation is passed by whatever sovereign nation state. They just don't care. But the fact is, they're not too big to fail. And they're not too big to jail. And they're not too big to care. Because if we chip away at the power they are able to exercise, both in an extra-parliamentary and a parliamentary way, we will find that they have an Achilles heel. And those of you who know your Greek mythology will know that Achilles was, you know, the biggest, the baddest, the bravest. But when he was made into the biggest, the baddest, the bravest by the gods, he was held by the ankle and, you know, placed in whatever he was placed in. He was pulled out. So his heel, his Achilles tendon, was what made him human. And obviously he was brought down because people were able to work out that he did have, he wasn't too big to fail, and he wasn't too big to jail, and he wasn't too big to not care about it. And it's the same with these virtual platforms. We do have the power to take them over. We do have the power to set up alternative platforms. Something the Western world has not done, unlike Russia and China. Irrespective of what you think of Russia and China, they've actually set up alternative platforms to challenge these organisations. But we have left it to the private sector. And if you leave it to the private sector, which is based on the principle of creating profits for your major shareholders or your owners, irrespective of the human, social, and environmental costs, you get what we get. People talk about, you know, social media addiction. They talk about children suiciding. They talk about the change in the political landscape because of social media. I mean, social, privately owned social media is nothing more than a soapbox. Where does the word soapbox comes? Well, obviously, in the early days of radio, a lot of manufacturers which made soap advertised on radio. It's the same now. Social media is not about you. It's not about giving a constant stream of information. It's about directing information at you, which will allow you, your eyeballs, to fall on advertising, which advertises everything. And if you are influenced by an influencer, the bigger the role the influencer has, the more cash goes into the influencer's pocket. Currently, we're seeing the ridiculous situation where a social media organisation based in Sri Lanka is putting out all this dribble regarding Australian politicians, which many people think is real, And the only reason isn't because they want to destabilise the country. They just want to make some bucks. Because the more eyeballs that fall on that crap, the more money they make. Very simple, using the system. So this current legislation that's in place, I mean, it's about giving users of the net the ability to switch off algorithms which are providing them with unsolicited information, which they don't want, which is causing them issues, which is eating away their time. It's no accident that a recent survey regarding the ability of Australian high school students, their ability regarding maths and English, is woeful. And it's obvious it's woeful because it's all about digital learning. Obviously, digital learning had a bit of a push with COVID-19, but the fact is COVID-19 has come and gone. Well, it's still here, but it's manageable. But the digital revolution continues. And we're seeing the dehumanisation of significant sections of our population. We're seeing the devaluing of skills and ideas and the truth. We're seeing all this constantly. And what's it for? Is it for to create some huge political movement that's going to improve people's lives? Obviously not. It's about ensuring that so-called influencers, people who draw your eyeballs to their site, make a buck out of destroying not just individuals, but destroying hard-gained structures and relationships which keep this society together. It's no wonder that the Liberal Party and the divided nation are jumping up and down regarding this proposed legislation because they think it'll be all about censorship. Their little influencers, their little people who are peddling the shit they peddle every day on social media may be able to be shut off by you and me. Isn't that terrible? That the individual has the choice to opt in or to opt out. Because if a significant number of individuals opt out, what happens is advertising revenue decreases. Because no advertiser is going to waste money advertising to a shrinking number of people. It's like commercial radio these days, whether it's AM or FM, commercial radio. It's a basket case, and it's a basket case because this is private commercial radio. It's a basket case because of drying up of advertising dollars. And about the only advertising you hear on commercial radio these days is for early retirement homes, hemorrhoid creams, funeral plans. And obviously, these so-called tech giants, which have ridden the social revolution, the social revolution, now find that their income stream may be affected. So they're not too big to fail, they're not too big to jail, and they're not too big to care about what is happening around them. And that's why they're screaming. They're screaming about censorship. You want to talk about censorship? I'll tell you what censorship is. Censorship is what we see today, where ideas which fall outside certain parameters ideas which challenge the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Ideas which, you know, highlight how billionaires in this country are manipulating this country, people in this country, in order to hold on to their ill-gotten gains. People who talk about these things, you never, 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 never see or hear them on the legacy media. And when it comes to social media, the ones who've got the influence are those who are able to personalise their particular struggle and those that are able to strip the humanity of others. It's just an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in, and we have allowed it to happen. We have allowed it to happen. Let's move on. Now, I know and you know that history is important. In order to, you need to understand the past. Well, you need to know the past to understand the present and change the future. It's very simple. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of a history lesson. Now, I know you may be bored with history because most Australians think history began when they woke up in the morning. That's when that's the real history. But the fact is that every single gain that is made on this continent since 1788, the beginning of the dispossession of the original inhabitants, has occurred as a consequence of the struggles of ordinary people. Everything we take for granted, whether it's a basic wage, whether it's holiday pay, whether it's access to universal health care, whether it's access to the NDIS, and the list goes on and on and on, pharmaceutical benefits scheme, leave loading, superannuation, you name it. Every single forward step has occurred because of the struggles that tens of thousands of men, women and children have been involved in this country since 1788 to improve the conditions of the very people whose labour is necessary to ensure increasing profits for the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. But they're unheard of. They're unheralded. They're unrecognised. As if they didn't exist. And most Australians have no idea where all this has come from. They think that it's, you know, been given to them by government or some generous employer. And most Australians don't understand why they find themselves in the situation they find themselves in 2026. Where bond rates for government loans are increasing, where there is increasing pressure to increasing interest rates, where everything seems to be going up and up. I'll give you an example. I've got a cat, yes, I know, and it's a sick little beast, and it needs a special dietary food, you know. First world problem, I can hear you say. Why don't you euthanize it? Well, I used to buy a 7 kilo bag of food at the beginning of the year for $148. I bought it yesterday. It was $197.50. Same bag, same 7 kilos, but it's gone up almost, 25-30%. And it's the same everywhere you look. And the ordinary worker, the people on Social Security benefits, are those that are asked to bear the pain through increasing prices. I'll give you another example. Everybody talks about productivity. We need to increase productivity in Australia. Unless you've got the right machinery or digital footprint. Increasing productivity is very difficult. So why do we find ourselves in this situation? Well, it's very simple. Even an idiot like me can actually understand this. You want to increase productivity, you need to update machinery, you need to update your digital footprint, you need to update things. Now, most businesses in this country are owned privately. And many of these privately owned businesses are corporations. Corporations raise money on the stock exchange for their expansion. In Australia, because of our taxation laws, yes, taxation laws, we find ourselves in a situation where corporations, when they make a profit, instead of ploughing those profits back into the organisation, they tend to distribute them amongst shareholders. And why do they distribute them amongst shareholders? One, because of a taxation advantage. But two, more importantly, they distribute them amongst shareholders because shareholders, with this increasing number of self-funded retirees, need a return yearly on their investment. So investors, and I'm talking about your superannuation fund here, tend to invest in corporations which give a dividend. That's a bonus at the end of the year to their shareholders. So what you see is more and more money flowing into the pockets of shareholders and less money being used to increase productivity by updating machinery. Very simple. Easy. Even I can remember that. Now let's get back to the story. All right, let's go to 1788. The colonisation process begins. People are displaced, murdered, their land's taken. There's no point stealing other people's land unless you've got other people to work that land. And obviously, the big business in the 1850s and 60s was sheep, because you didn't have refrigeration. You could shear sheep, put the wool on a bloody boat and send it to England to the industrial hellholes. But the fact is, how are workers treated? Well, not only did you get free land if you're a squatter, you know, a rich landowner, you also got free labour, convicts, or ticket of leave men and women who'd done their sentence but were employed at a peppercorn rate. I don't know if you ever heard of the currency lads and lasses. I've gone on a side here, but it's interesting. Currency lads and lasses were the children of the ticket of leave convicts who weren't going to be paid in food and shelter as their parents had been and lived almost a slave-like existence. They wanted cash for their efforts. But getting back to Australian history. In 1822, that's almost 204 years ago, you think to yourself, what's this got to do with me? You know, 204 years ago, that was before any of us were born. It's ludicrous. This bloke's gone mad. All right? Well, maybe I have. But in 1822, the big kid on the block was Mr. MacArthur of Merino Sheep fame. Had huge tracts of land in New South Wales and large number of convicts tending that land and his sheep. So that means he had free land, free labour. If you gave me free land and free labour, I can assure you I could create a lifestyle I could come to enjoy, you know. So obviously he was raking in the cash. Now, his convicts lived the most basic existence, and although they're supposed to be paid a few pounds a month, that money went into their upkeep, you know, renting a little tin cup, renting their clothes, So in 1822, a Mr. James Strater, a convict, decided that enough is enough. It's about time they treated us as human beings, that we actually had access to the basic necessity of life, rations which could sustain them. And in 1822, at the beginning of the lambing season, Mr. James Strater said, "No, I'm not going to assist the lambing system. The sheep can die as far as I'm concerned." And he refused to work, but at the same time, he incited his fellow convicts to also desist from working. Now, poor old James Strater obviously was arrested, all right? This is 1822. He was put in front of the Glebe Magistrates Court, and he was charged with the heinous crime of inciting his master's servants to combine in order to oblige him to increase their wages and improve their conditions. Heinous. Inciting his master's servants to combine. The very essence of trade unionism. In order to oblige him, not force him, in order to oblige him to increase their wages and conditions. So he fronts up to the Glebe Magistrates Court. His case is heard by the magistrates, who are basically nothing more than apologists for the colonial authorities. And he was sentenced, you'll like this, 500 lashes of the cat o' nine tail. 500 lashes means the flesh is stripped off your back. And that's 500 lashes in one sitting. If he survived that, which is highly unlikely, he was then to be jailed for 4 weeks in solitary confinement on bread and water. Could you imagine the festering maggots in his back if he survived this? And if he survived the 4 weeks of solitary confinement on bread and water, he was then to serve the rest of his penal sentence in a penal colony, like the dreaded Maria Island or Norfolk Island, where people had no rights whatsoever. So why am I telling you this little story? Well, this is the beginning, the very beginning of working people coming together, generation after generation, to improve the situation they find themselves in. So let's fast forward to 2026. 204 years later. So what do we have in this country? We have the end of collective bargaining. We have the criminalisation of workplace activity. We have the passage of legislation which prevents workers from withdrawing their labour outside an agreed enterprise bargaining agreement period. We have the ridiculous situation, as we've seen with the CFMEU and other militant unions in this country, where extraordinary penalties were imposed on these unions for sending organisers into building sites without the permission of the owner, the builder. Extraordinary. We see individual workers fined $10,000 a day for being involved in an unauthorised strike. We see legislation which is stripping away workers' compensation rights for workers who are injured at work. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And why do we find ourselves in this situation? We find ourselves in this situation because the ability for people to withdraw their labour and collectively bargain to improve their situation has been legislated away by successive governments. And now we have media outlets in this country running around telling us about the criminals in the trade union movement. How about the criminals outside the trade union movement who run this country? How about the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication? How about those large transnational corporations which rip this country's mineral resources out of the ground and pay peppercorn royalties and minimal taxation? How about the fact that there's never enough money, never enough resources to pay for essential services in this country because the taxation system is basically dependent on the pay-as-you-earn taxpayer? Less than 26% of taxation comes from the largest corporations in this country. One-third paid no tax. We have huge transnational corporations which pay less tax than somebody earning $200,000 a year, although they have multi-million dollar turnovers. And can we blame the government for this? No. Do I blame the Labor Party for this? No. I blame us. Because for far too long, we have decided that, you know, you can't fight City Hall. There's no point. We're going to lose. What's the point of putting your head above the parapet? What's the point of exposing yourself to, you know, to their power? Well, the fact is, Mr. James Strater, in 1822, put his head above the parapet, paid the price, but set the ball rolling. And through the 19th century, we saw more and more and more forward steps by people who are willing to withdraw their labour to improve their situation. And then we saw World War II. And when people came back, they demanded something for their sacrifice. They demanded that they be included, that they shared in the Commonwealth. And for the next 20 years, it seemed to go, things moved quickly. The situation improved for a lot of people because of collective action, collective bargaining, parliamentary and extra-parliamentary activity, which wasn't illegal at that stage, which was part and parcel of this country's traditions. That's right. Part and parcel of this country's traditions. But today, less than 12% of workers in this country are unionised. Most people are individual contracts. Wage growth is below the rate of inflation. And the list goes on and on. And what do? We turn on each other. That person over there is wearing the thing over their head. They're evil. They're the problem. Let's get rid of them and this country will be good. And we see political parties that are using hatred as their mantra, dividing us on the basis of what are relatively superficial differences. Because ultimately, it doesn't matter the colour of the boot that's on your neck. It doesn't matter who's wearing that boot. The problem is the boot is on your neck, and unless you're willing to fight to get that boot off your neck, nothing is going to change. And that's the story of our history. Pre-colonial, post-colonial. That is the story. And we face an existential crisis in 2026 where we're seeing the dispossessed, the marginalised, the working poor turn on each other, believing that the only way forward is to fight each other, to support political movements, political parties which divide us on the basis of relatively artificial divisions. We're no longer willing to look at the power which is wielded by the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, who determine the parliamentary agenda. A few things I'd like to mention before we finish. One is Eureka. Eureka Day, 3rd of December. It's a Thursday this year. As you know, for the last 23 years, this is the 24th year, we hold celebrations in Ballarat to mark that day. And why do we mark that day? We mark that day because of the Eureka Oath. We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties. They believed in 1854, they were born with inalienable rights and liberties, and they were willing to fight for them. And it was an internationalist force, and they used direct democracy, and they used direct action. And solidarity was the key. Solidarity against a common enemy. So put it down in your diary, 3rd of December. I'll speak more about it next week. And also remember, I'm still interested in standing as a candidate in the electorate of Sunbury in Victoria for the coming Victoria election. Why Sunbury? Well, it's interesting. It's one of those electorates where divided nation with Liberal Party support has a good chance of winning because of the dissatisfaction that we see on the margins of communities around this country, people who've been left out of the decision-making process. So if you live in Sunbury or Wildwood or Buller or Melbourne Airport or Diggers Rest or Gladstone Park or Tullamarine, that's the Sunbury electorate, and you're interested in nominating me as a candidate on a radical independent platform to try to attempt to hold back the divided nation tsunami, well, give us a ring. 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. I'll keep the phones open till the end of the month. If nothing happens, well, nothing happens. If something happens, we move forward. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Don't forget, Eureka Medal nominations are now open. We give out 6 Eureka Medals on the 3rd of December to activists who have done the hard yards but have never been recognised. If you do have somebody, you can email their name to info@pibci.net, info@pibci.net, or you can leave a message on 0439 395 489. And if you're shy, you can always write to us at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, courtesy of those brilliant people at the Community Radio Network. This program has been coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. Share the podcast with your friends. Send it to your enemies. I'm sure they'd love it. Send them the podcast. Give them the link, 3cr.org.au/anarchistworldthisweek. And Henrietta, the person you should criticise for running The Anarchist World This Week, will be podcasting the program in the next few days. Thank you once again. Listening to The Anarchist World This Week, courtesy of the local community radio station next week. And if you miss bits and pieces of it, you can always listen to the podcast. Listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station.
Minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.